At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Giles Brown.
Let's talk.
The Birdman of Auschwitz. The life of Günter Niethammer, the ornithologist seduced by the Nazis. As you know, listeners, I have an interest in history, and I have a particular interest in the Third Reich, for better or worse, and the whole situation with how a nation can go be completely brainwashed and go down a path of nihilism to destruction. And every now and again, a story comes across my radar that I didn't know about, and completely, to use a technical term, blows my socks off. And this latest work is absolutely one of this. It is a new book by Nicholas Milton. I'm delighted to say that Nicholas joins us now to talk about the Birdman of Auschwitz. Nicholas, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
This is, when I looked at the title of this, I had one of those moments where I went, well, it can't literally be an ornithologist in Auschwitz, you know, the scene of some of the most horrendous crimes against humanity ever committed. And then I read the background and who this guy was and the denial. And it just, you think you've heard that the Second War has given you enough to be thinking of and chewing on, and then a story like this comes out of the woodwork, and you just shake your head and go, good grief. So tell me a little bit about A, who Günter Niethammer was, and B, how you found this story.
Okay, thanks, Giles. So Günter Niethammer was probably the most eminent ornithologist and scientist of his generation. Think, had he not have joined the Nazi party and the Waffen-SS and ended up as a guard at Auschwitz, he would probably be today celebrated as probably the greatest ornithologist of his era. The fact is, before the war, he had he excelled academically. He'd done his doctorate in avian autonomy, which he got in 1932. He'd risen rapidly and had become the head of the Natural History Museum in Bonn when the war broke out. At the time, he was too old to join up, with his very academic background, both the army and the Air Force turned him down. And he then, in May 1940, joined the Waffen-SS and ended up in September 1940 as a guard at Auschwitz, where he was put on the infamous Gate G, above which is the Arbeit macht frei sign, which we're all familiar with, work sets you free. It's interesting to think about, you know, we'll all have our idea of the type of guard that ended up at Auschwitz. I think, an erudite academic, probably the leading one of his generation, is not who we would have in mind. He came from a strict Catholic family. I mean, he was, and for him to end up there was an extremely traumatic experience for him. And my book sort of delves into his relationship, particularly with the volatile commandant Rudolf Höss, who he knew personally, and Höss liked him. Unlike many of his officers who constantly came to him with problems, Niethammer was somebody who he sort of liked. He shot game for him and brought that back to his house. Also carried out the most infamous bird survey of all time. So actually did a bird survey of Auschwitz. To do this, he was given special duties by Höss. So he was relieved from being a guard in the watchtower. He basically, and as you know, Auschwitz to Birkenau, it's a huge, it's 40 square kilometres. He sort of covered that area on a bicycle. He also had a boat. It was, before they built it, a series of villages and waterlogged meadows, which were extremely rich in birds. And Niethammer did a survey of this and wrote it up as a scientific paper, which was published in the annals of the Natural History Museum in Vienna, a very prestigious establishment. And of course, why Höss was so keen to do this was he was keen to cover up what was actually happening at Auschwitz. And what better way to do that? You know, what better way to say this isn't an extermination camp, this is a prison camp, than to publish a scientific survey of the birds occurring there. And just to give you an idea of some of the birds that he surveyed, there's a bird called a black red star. He put up nesting boxes in and around the guards' barracks and also in Höss's back garden. And one of the birds that nested there was called this black red star. It's a bird with a red on its tail that it flicks open. It built its nest from human hair, which was obviously shaved from the inmates in Auschwitz. He recorded sort of curlews flying over the crematorium. He recorded blue tits, starlings, and great tits nesting in and around the camp. And he would go in, you know, to check the nests each day, see how many eggs there were, and then, you know, a bit like spring watch, see how many birds were fledged. Some of your listeners, I'm sure, will have seen the film The Zone of Interest, you know, by Jonathan Glazer, amazing movie. And I watched that twice, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. The only thing I would have loved to have seen was those bird boxes in Höss's garden, because we absolutely know they were there. Why do we know that they were there? Because when the Russians liberated Auschwitz in January 1945, They were absolutely amazed among all these half-burnt corpses and emaciated sort of prisoners. And we've all seen those terrible, terrible pictures. They were absolutely amazed to find bird boxes. And in his safe, when they went into his house, they found this paper by Niethammer with a very sort of glowing tribute to his commandant in it. So it's an amazing story.
Just want to go back a little bit, because people might think, well, how is an ornithologist, and, you know, with the greatest respect to any ornithologist out there, how do they get tangled up in the Nazi regime? But of course, it's a different time, and one of the tenets of quote unquote a forward thinking progressive nation, as Hitler is trying to portray to the rest of the world in the 30s, is it's aviation, it's sports, it's public work, it's public works, but it's also science in all its variety. So it's not only things that you think like what Walter von Brausch is doing or aviation or whatever, but it's also, you know, the other sciences. I mean, we have, you know, seed production, you know, there's obviously the eugenics that comes in, if you want to be a scientist, you know, in biology or ornithology, you have to join. If you do anything in Germany from the sort of 35 onwards, you've got to join the Nazi party. And so, do we think that, you know, are we of the opinion that Niethammer is naive, but joining, okay, the Nazi party, but then to go to the Waffen-SS, which is going even deeper into the belly of the beast? Is this a conscious decision on his part? Is he doing it because he naively, and I'm using that word really carefully, naively thinks it's going to further his career in ornithology?
Yeah, absolutely. And the book very much looks at whether he was naive or whether he was complicit in the Holocaust. You're right, he joined the Nazi Party in 1937. I think at the time that the Second World War broke out, I think like a lot of Germans, he probably had some reservations. But the spectacular victories, and we all know about this, as the Third Reich rapidly expanded to take in the whole of Europe. And what we forget is, yes, those eras were ruthlessly economically exploited for their resources and for people to send back to the Third Reich. But they were also exploited scientifically, and Hermann Göring was a big fan of him, you know, as well as most people know him as the head of the Luftwaffe. He was also the head of the German hunting and forests. And his plan for Poland, by the way, was to turn it into a massive national park that would sort of serve the new Lebensraum, the new sort of living space in the east for German colonists who were meant to follow in the wake of the great German victories that went on there. And he was literally going to turn the whole of Poland into a national park and you know, release sort of, you know, the European bison and stuff like that. And that's what his vision of this was. And so Niethammer wanted to be part of what of this, and thought he was missing out on these fantastic scientific opportunities that came in the wake of great German victories. So that's why I think he was so keen to get involved. And you know, like a lot of academics, he was he wanted very much to progress his career. We tend to forget that because they've got doctorates and because they, you know, because they're seen to be, you know, sort of quite erudite. But most of them are quite, you know, quite want to progress their career. He was no different. And therefore he ended up putting his career above his conscience. And as a consequence, though he could have never have envisaged this, ended up as a guard at Auschwitz of all places.
As a scientist, as an ornithologist, you keep journals, you keep documents, you write, you have to. When you discover this, one of the horrendous things about the final solution is I've always thought that the train, you know, is what, you know, Eichberg is saying, you know, that, you know, the train tables, and that's, and it's the banality of evil. And it's, you know, you're talking about moving, you know, it's the timetables of the trains to the camps. And it's just as if it's the, you know, going from Clapham Junction to, I don't know, Three Bridges or something like that. And it's the banality of evil. Is there anything that comes through then in the research that Niethammer is doing? Are there personal notes he keeps that, you know, perhaps show some, if not he understands what's going on, then sort of a blinkered naivety where he can switch off what's going on around him and saying, you know, and I, you know, I, you just said something which absolutely made something went dropped out of my stomach when you said the nests made of human hair, for example.
No, it's just amazing. So before the war, he had published the Handbook of German Ornithology. This was a monumental work, three volumes, and it was the precursor to all our modern identification guides. Nobody had ever attempted to do that before. The German bird list was over 500 species. The first of those two handbooks came out in 1937 and 1939, but the third one came out in 1942. And you can still get it. And in there, you see that, you know, he's a serving member of the Waffen-SS. That's how he signs off the book. You've got the SS runes there. And, you know, I've got a copy at home. It's just incredible that, somebody like that should end up at Auschwitz. And you're absolutely right. You know, I went through meticulously. It's a very long research paper that he published on the bird life of Auschwitz. And in it, there are tantalizing sort of glimpses of what was happening. He talks about a lot of the villages being dissolved. He talks about magpies. Be very aware of magpies hunting in packs and killing the domesticated ducks that were left behind by the residents who had been forcefully expelled at gunpoint from those villages. He talks about swallows nesting in and around the camp, We're all familiar with swallows. They're one of the wonders of summer, aren't they? And he did a study of those in and amongst the genocide, and he absolutely saw what was going on after the war. Interestingly, he never denied that he knew about the purpose of Auschwitz. He just said that he was following orders. He was put on trial by the Polish government. And originally sentenced with some other guards to 8 years in prison. But the scientific community, both in Germany and Austria, mounted this concerted campaign, as did, unbelievably, the British authorities. The British were quite fundamental in getting that prison sentence reduced from 8 years to 3 years. So he spent just 3 years in jail and afterwards resumed his career. And although it was tainted by his association with Auschwitz, in post-war Germany, nobody wanted to talk about the Holocaust. Nobody wanted to talk about genocide. And his career sort of flourished until his early death in 1974. And the book looks at whether he was, as you said, naive, or whether he was complicit in the Holocaust. And it comes down on the conclusion that probably he was complicit in the Holocaust, because all it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing, or for good men to look the other way, pursue their own narrow interests. That's what he did.
It's interesting because people say, oh my, because we all say, oh, well, if I'd been there in Germany in 1935, I would have stood up for that. But you can't say that because you don't know, because you weren't there. And also, if you are born in 1920 and therefore you start going to primary school or whatever it is, by the time you're 10, it's 1930. By the time you've been brainwashed by the system, because you've been taught that, and the ideology kicks into some tropes that have been of anti-Semitism that's been going through since the Middle Ages. But and also, this whole thing about how can an ornithologist be looking at these, how can they look at their conscience every day? Well, the horrible truth is that, you can be a lover of the animal kingdom, but you can be a complete monster. Hitler's got Blondie, his German Alsatian. The other side, you've got the Soviets who are invading, who are coming, in the last stage, are coming through Poland and then the whole situation, and doing unspeakable things as retribution because it's been done to them, to the German population and the women folk in particular. And yet they've got puppies. They get sentimental about puppies and things like that. So he can be a lover of nature, but look at human life or unto mention, as he'd be putting it, as quite something entirely different, and scientifically perhaps so justify that.
Absolutely. I mean, when he's put on trial after the war, there's a sort of very long transcript that's still available for historians, where he tries to justify what he did. He said that he always treated the prisoners, in his word, in a good and proper way. The guards were mostly psychopaths, sadists and bullies. He wasn't in that category. He was in the category where he sort of probably did feel great sympathy and sorrow for what was going on, but rather than trying to trying to change the regime or use his influence with Hoss, he instead was desperate to get out of the camp, and he got a transfer at the end of 1941. But unfortunately for him, went back in September 1942 when the Holocaust was in full progress. And so he is complicit. He said he was just following orders, and people can read the book and see whether or not they think that that was a justifiable sort of excuse for what he did.
And he has an exhibition of he compiles this sort of macabre museum, but he also gets an inmate to help him with him, and they go out and this is a film,
bizarre,
if ever,
isn't it? Yes.
Well, it's a film if ever I saw him, because if he's saying I wasn't imagine the situation for the person who's helping him on this. He's seeing family and friends being murdered, basically exterminated, and yet he's spending his days going out and looking, searching for bird life.
Absolutely. So at roll call one day, with Hoss's permission, because you couldn't do anything without Hoss's permission, it was asked whether anybody had sort of was an ornithologist with particular skills in taxidermy. A Polish prisoner came forward by the name of Jan Graboki. He worked very closely with Neathammer, created this natural history macabre museum of bird skins, which Hoss gave them a special area to exhibit it in. Himmler came around and saw it. He said it was a good idea and that other camps should follow suit. Graboki sadly died towards the end of the Second World War. A ship he was on at the time was sunk along with a lot of other sort of prisoners. So he worked with Neathammer to create this museum. There were hundreds of bird skins that were all set out in meticulous detail. And of course, the irony of it was exactly what was happening to the birds was just a few meters away was sort of happening to the human population, particularly the Jews. It's just amazing. And some of those bird skins, by the way, still exist. They're in the Natural History Museum in Vienna. They were very helpful with the book. In their basement, in their archives, they've got some of these bird skins, which are all labelled meticulously, as you would expect of the Nazis. And they, you know, they don't get them out very often, I'll be honest with you, but I was able to photograph some of them. They're on, you know, they're in the book. And I think part of maybe coming to terms with the past might be to do some sort of exhibition of those, to put them on display once more. So one of the other interesting things, he was based in Vienna during the war, his new role came with a big remuneration package, which included a rather lavish mansion, which had formerly belonged to a Jew who was sent to the concentration camp and killed. And to give you an idea of the scale of it, it's now the Libyan embassy in Vienna. That was Neathammer's former home, where he lived with his four children. So it's just incredible, really. But yes, after the war, one of the excuses was that he worked with this Polish prisoner to create this bird museum, and he tried very hard to find him because he thought he would be a witness to the fact that he was a. You know, that he was a good man, but of course he died.
That's like sort of Himmler and a bunch of the other German top Nazi brass literally picking prisoners out and taking them around with them to say, look, I'm looking after these guys, you know, don't hang me out of hand. It's also really fascinating, isn't it, that post-war period, because, you know, if you don't know the nuances, is that Germany is absolutely destroyed, but they can't. Because everybody is pretty much complicit, you know, and it's shown as people have walked through the camps afterwards, you know, they know what's going on, but you cannot put a whole race or a whole nation in prison. And so they have to get, like in Spain, we have the Pact of Forgetting, very much so in Germany. And you find, you know, middle ranking or lower ranking people who's belong in the Nazi party, because they're not all Nazis are Hollywood villains, unfortunately. And they have to be able to get on with it. And that's what a lot of people do. You know, obviously Paperclip is the most famous case where the Americans are picking and choosing scientists that they'll help them with their rocket program before the Soviets get them. But people like Neathammer are pretty much allowed to go back to be, I was going to say model citizens, but you know what I'm getting at here, don't you, Nicholas?
Absolutely. And look, his academic achievements, his hundreds of bird papers, scientific reports, this monumental three volumes of this handbook. He should have become the director. He never did, because the board didn't want somebody who had his associations to become director. Nevertheless, you know, he headed up the German Ornithological Society. He travelled the world doing scientific research. He had a good life, was able to pursue his academic sort of, you know, challenges. It is an amazing story, but you're absolutely right. After the war, you couldn't prosecute everybody. What's very interesting is now, of course, there are still a handful of people who were involved in the Holocaust who are still being prosecuted by the German government. And one of the people who was there with him was a guy called Oskar Gröning, who some of your listeners might know. know as the bookkeeper of Auschwitz, he was put on trial and died before he could be put in prison. Had Niethammer have lived longer, I've not a shadow of doubt that historians and other people would have looked into his story a lot more carefully, and he would have been brought to trial. And just to give you an idea, one of the things that he tried desperately hard to cover up his tracks after the war. So instead of saying he'd done a bird survey of Auschwitz, he actually changed the dates and just said he'd done a bird survey of Upper Silesia, which is that area of Poland. He took the word Auschwitz out of any of his sort of scientific papers and anything, and tried to cover his tracks. As did other sort of scientists in the Third Reich. Yes, I think had he have lived longer, he would have been brought to trial again. That's my view.
How did you come across him? And how do you write? I've only got 2 minutes, Nicholas, so sure. Unfortunately. Yeah. So yeah, how did you come across him, and how difficult was this book to write? Because there must be points where you're shaking your head going,
it's a really traumatic, quite depressing reading, Hoss's, book, The Commandant of Auschwitz. I found the scientific paper on the bird life of Auschwitz. I couldn't believe it. I thought, really, is this really true? Did somebody really do a bird survey of Auschwitz? And of course, it turned out to be true. There's a H-page sort of, research paper there. I read it and I thought, this has got to, somebody's got to look into this in detail. This man, has got a story here, and it needs to be told because it's a different slant on the Holocaust.
What are you hoping that people are going to take from this, Nicholas?
I'm hoping that sort of people will understand that, every section of society, even the most highly sort of, skilled erudite scientists and academics were able to be seduced by the Nazis. It wasn't just a certain cross section of society. And I'd like to see the museum in Vienna maybe putting on display the birds that they've got, and some sort of, and maybe the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Memorial Museum doing something on Niethammer as well. I think it would be great if they could work together to tell his story, because it needs to be told. It's an important part of us understanding the Holocaust.
Yeah, it is indeed. And as I said before, I mean, I hadn't come across this, and it's absolutely, completely sort of blown my mind, as the saying goes. The book is called The Burman and Auschwitz, The Life of Günter Niethammer, the Ornithologist Seduced by the Nazis. It's by Nicholas Milton, who we're talking to today. Nicholas, if people want to find you online, social media, websites, where can people find you and how to take this discussion further?
Yeah, and if they want to find me online, just put in The Birdman of Auschwitz, it'll come up with, the book, and people can contact me via the publisher Pen and Sword, and I'd be delighted to answer any questions that people have about it.
Well,
and,
like I said, it's been absolutely amazing to find out about this. I'm going to continue this conversation with you at some point in the future, because totally fascinating, macabre, and eye-opening. You can order it via our own virtual bookstore as well on TRE. The website tro.radio. The book is called The Birdman of Auschwitz. Nicholas, it's been eye-opening to speak to you today.
Thank you very much, and you, Charles. Thank you.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time, and still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open and happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.